Hola, listener. You've clicked on episode 46 of the Jock and Nerd podcast. We have a very special guest on the show, master storyteller Greg Wiseman, who created Gargoyles. He also produced Spectacular Spider-Man and Young Justice. What are you waiting for? Let's listen.
It's the Jock and Nerd podcast with your hosts, Anthony and Imran.
Hey, friend, and welcome to the Jock and Nerd podcast. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he's the nerd.
And listen, I'm not going to waste any more of our time because we have an amazeballs guest joining us today, writer, producer, and master storyteller Greg Wiseman. Now, that name alone should give you...
Geek boner!
Here's why. Greg has written for both Marvel and DC Comics. He helped create Gargoyles on Disney. He has written countless awesome cartoons from Batman to Transformers. He was a supervising producer on The Spectacular Spider-Man, producer of Young Justice, and executive producer on the first season of Star Wars Rebels. If that's not enough, he's also a novelist. He's written two great novels, Reign of the Ghost and Spirits of Ash and Foam. He's currently producing, writing, and directing a full cast unabridged audio play based on Reign of Ghost, and the man is a master storyteller. Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Was all that accurate?
Yes, it sounded, assuming I was paying attention, then yes.
I want to just say too that Young Justice is the best animated TV show I've ever seen in my life. Just want to say that right now. So.
Yeah, we're going to try not to gush too much,
but there's
going to be some gushing because, you know, for both of us, you have been involved in possibly, you know, a number of the top animated series of all time. Any decent, you know, best cartoon show list has all these shows on.
I thought you were going to go with any decent human being has seen these shows.
Well, that too.
And enjoyed them.
Greg, let's start out with, I love your storytelling skills. Do you remember when you first realized that you wanted to tell stories, or maybe some of the first stories you told as a kid that you're like, I like telling stories?
I think I always told stories, always. Other words for that are lies, but
that's good, yeah.
The place where it sort of coalesced for me was in second grade. Yeah. I mean, I remember this very specifically. My second grade teacher, we had spelling words, and the homework, the weekly homework was to bring those words home and come back the next day with, you know, if there were 10 words, you had to write 10 sentences, you know, word per sentence, using the words correctly and obviously spelling them correctly. And what I did is I would take the 10 words and not just make 10 sentences, but I would write a story. And my teacher, a wonderful teacher named Sandy Voyne. I remember her very clearly. And she was kind of impressed, I guess. And keep in mind, this is before, you know, we all had computers, because I'm beyond ancient. So when I was in second grade, people were still, you know, carving words into rocks. but what she did is she took the stories that I wrote over the whole year and she put them into a book, and it wasn't as easy as just, you know, e-publishing or something like that. She did, in essence, like calligraphy, you know, to create this book, and it meant a tremendous amount to me then, and I still have the book, and it wasn't fancy really, but it was just sort of like, wow, you know.
Yeah.
And from that point on, writing was always, you know, the main thing for me. I started writing my first unfinished novel in the sixth grade. It was a dramatic story, not a comedy, a dramatic story about the annual sixth grade faculty softball game.
it sounds exciting.
That's not a novel I finished. I have many unfinished novels, but I only have two that I finished so far. Anyway.
I love how you strung the sentences together, because I bet all the kids were just writing random...
The cat is weird.
Yeah, one-off sentences, and they probably weren't creative.
That was the assignment. It's not like the assignment was to do what I was doing, so it's not like they were doing anything wrong. That was what they were asked to do. If the spelling word was cat, then yeah, the cat is furry. And the next spelling word is dog. You write the dog barks, and that's all you needed to do. Actually, it was second grade, not kindergarten, so I'm sure the words were a little more complex.
Yeah, they're a little
that.
More
that's the
syllables.
Basic idea.
Yeah.
And that's all you were asked to do, but I took it a step further because I wanted to. And because I like telling stories and always have. And the fact is that's what I am fundamentally. You know, people talk to me about, well, do you like writing novels? Do you like, you know, animation? Do you like comic books? Because I've done all of those things. And and they're like, you know, and which one is you? And I'm like, well, all of them, none of them, because the fact is that what I am more than anything else is a storyteller. If this were, you know, medieval England, I'd be the troubadour going from town to town with a lute, telling stories that way. You know, the medium is less important to me than the storytelling itself, but it's not medieval England because the fact is that I'm really bad at the lute and no one wants to see me in tights. So,
do you play any instruments?
No.
where do you draw upon the ideas for your stories? Are these life experiences, or do you come up with these just off the top of your head?
Everywhere, anywhere.
Yeah?
I mean, definitely life experience plays a role in it, but I try not to limit myself to my own life because, let's face it, my life is fairly dull. I'm a middle-aged, middle-class white male. That's all I wrote about it. It would be pretty boring.
No, I mean, across all of your work, the storytelling and the character development comes across clear. It's what I think a lot of people connect with the characters you write, and that's what makes these shows special. And so I've listened to a bunch of podcasts that you've been on, and I love that you love to talk about it, and you know, you answer questions at Comic Cons. That's really great. And I've heard you say, you know, you've been a supervisory producer, an executive producer, a supervising producer, just a producer. Now, between the three of us here, it's all the same shit, isn't it? Really, kind of.
Yeah, and that was the point of when I talked about that was that, you know, I'm a showrunner. I mean, generally, my forget what the title is. My role on a show like Gargoyles or Spectacular Spider-Man or Witch or Max Steel or Young Justice or the first season of Rebels, I'm a showrunner. That's the job. Now, that's not a credit that you see on screen, so the credit's different depending on the studio. So on Witch, I was a supervisory producer. On Gargoyles, I started as a co-producer, then became a producer, then became supervising producer. On Young Justice, I was just a producer. On Spider-Man, I was supervising producer. On Rebels, I was one of three executive producers.
Wow.
The title, whatever, it's kind of fungible because the fact of the matter is that the job is showrunner. But that's not a title that anyone sees on screen.
Yeah, that's
true. That's the job.
Yeah.
And from an industry standpoint, people say, well, what do you do? And I say, if I'm talking to someone in the industry and I say, hey, I'm a showrunner, they understand what that means.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas if I say, well, I'm a producer, they'll look at me like, okay, what does that really mean? Because everyone in the industry knows that all sorts of people get producer credits that don't necessarily have anything to do with the show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, I adore Stan Lee personally and obviously professionally and everything like that. And he got an executive producer title on The Spectacular Spider-Man. But other than the one episode where he did a voice for us, he didn't work on the show at all.
Yeah,
now, of course, everything we did was based on his work.
Right.
So I don't grudge him that credit at all.
Yeah.
But let's face it, from the standpoint of actual involvement in the show, that credit is contractual. It's got nothing to do with the work he did.
Wow.
One thing I insisted on is that when it said The Spectacular Spider-Man on the screen, we wrote created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, because no matter what work he did or didn't do on the show itself, that show couldn't have existed without Stan and Steve, and frankly also without Stan and John Romita Sr.
Yeah.
A lot of other Spider creators in there as well in the work we did, without a doubt, but the three sort of pillars that we built that show on were Stan, Steve, and John.
I love in that Spectacular Spider-Man how you guys are able to treat his whole history, his classic villains and modern villains, and tie it together in such a great way. To me, and I've said it, we did a whole show on the Spider-Man on TV, and to me, like, that is the best adaptation of the character on screen still to this day.
More gushing from us, Greg.
A little more gushing.
A little bit more gushing.
Well, it's immodest, but I completely agree with you.
There you go.
You know, we had the benefit of hindsight, yeah. You know, when Spider-Man's created in 1963 or two, I don't remember. I used to know this, but I can't remember. Maybe four.
Early
60s.
Yeah.
And so you've got 45 years or so continuity by the time we start developing that show.
Yeah.
And what that means is that, you know, that's a lot of writers, a lot of artists, a lot of editors over the years, a lot of different editorial policy over the years. And so creating something coherent when you're running along is very difficult. But when I'm stepping back from it all and saying, okay, I want to create something cohesive, I want to create something coherent. We had on that show what we called the five C's. We wanted the show to be coherent, cohesive. We wanted it to be contemporary, but we also wanted it to feel classic. And then the fifth C was iconic, which actually begins with an I, but has a nice hard C sound in there.
There's a C in there.
We'll take that.
And so that was, you know, that went with classic because we wanted the characters to feel classic, but we also wanted them to look iconic. Mm-hmm. And yet, so the main thing was making it contemporary, but we also had the benefit of being able to look at all that continuity and sort of say, okay, you know, how do we make this into a coherent, cohesive way so that the technology, for example, the creation of supervillains comes out of a coherent thing and doesn't just feel like all these random accidents are happening left and right.
Right.
But is all coming from a few specific sources. That there's a rationale behind it. And it doesn't seem quite so random and quite so arbitrary. And that's something that's not that hard to do with the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah.
It's very hard to do as you're running across 40 years with all these different writers and editors. There's a reason why we're able to do it after the fact.
You're able to see what works and what doesn't, and then kind of combine it, make
and
it a little bit more coherent.
Yeah,
exactly. I'll just say this for you, Greg. It's Spectacular Spider-Man is way better than Ultimate Spider-Man. Ultimate Spider-Man sucks. I'm just saying. I'm not saying.
I got an issue with Man of Action. If I ever meet those guys on the street, I don't know. I don't know what I do.
Well, they're very good guys. I like those guys. I have never watched Ultimate Spider-Man because there's no good news for me in that. You know, if I don't like the show, it's just frustrating to me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And if I do like the show, I'm just jealous. So, I literally have never watched it, so I have no opinion on Ultimate.
That's a
positive or negative. I just have no opinion because I have not seen it.
That's a lose-lose situation there. In the Spectacular Spider-Man, I love the idea of meeting all the villains before they became the villains, and you saw their relationship. Kind of like what Gotham is trying to do, but failing miserably. You guys did it way better. I rewatched the first episode. This is the genius of like the research they did. The fact that you guys used the Enforcers in the first episode. The Enforcers are this obscure team that debuted in Amazing Spider-Man 10 in 1964. Like, if you were a kid...
I mean, here's the thing. Yeah. You say they're an obscure team, but that just shows that you're much, much younger than me. Because I didn't think of them as obscure. They were very memorable to me.
Yeah.
And so part of it is that when I got the gig in the first place, I went out and I bought all those, the phone book volumes, the reprints.
Yeah, the masterpiece, Marvel masterpieces.
Those are the fancy ones. I got the newsprint phone book size ones.
I've seen those. They're like the essential Spider-Man collection.
That's it. Essential. Right. So I got seven volumes of Essential Spider-Man or something like that, maybe more.
Wow.
At least seven. And so I immediately set about reading this stuff. Now, I'd read it all before. None of it was new to me. I'd read literally all of it before, but it had been a while.
Yeah.
And this time I'm reading it and I'm taking notes. But, you know, if I get to Colonel Jupiter,
yeah,
you know, I remember this was a great story. And this was an amazing issue because it was also the issue that introduced finally, after teasing her for months, it introduced Mary Jane Watson.
Oh.
And it had a great sort of rhino subplot and all this stuff. All of this stuff shoved into one issue. And, you know, it was Jonah's son. So it really helped us motivate a lot of stuff for Jonah,
yeah,
as well as for John Jameson. And you know, people like, oh my God, what an obscure character you pulled out, Colonel Jupiter. And I'm like, you know, not really, because if you read the stuff, this issue was a fulcrum issue, you know. It was absolutely an issue that things turned on.
Right.
And I remembered it very clearly from as a kid. And I don't mean when it first came out, because even I'm not that old.
Okay.
But, but the point is that over the years, that story was reprinted many times,
mm-hmm,
you know, in Treasury editions and stuff like that. And so, you know, seeing it again, it wasn't like, oh, yeah. It was like, oh, yeah, you know. And of course, if someone writes a transcript, that's not going to mean anything. But from the standpoint of, you know, enthusiasm, a lot of the things that people, I mean, look, we did do some obscure stuff,
yeah,
in the show. You know, Coach Smith is pretty obscure. And,
oh, that's right.
And Miles Warren's older brother, Aaron Warren.
Oh, my God, that's right.
High school professor, you know, those, there were some things in there that were obscure that were by virtue of me having reread everything. But you know, a lot of the stuff that people do say were obscure, I'm like, well, it wasn't obscure to me because those were significant and important characters back in the day. Just because no one's used them much recently,
yeah,
doesn't mean they're actually obscure. It just means that they're not in the currency at the moment.
Now, it was a brilliant use of his mythology and his backstory. Before we continue, we got to thank David Malofsky from,
yes,
A Place to Hang,
sure,
Your Cape. I don't want to miss that. He's the editor in cape of Place Your Hang Cape, ap2hyc.com. He's the one who hooked us up with you. You did a little interview with David, and so
you talked a lot about Young Justice.
Yeah, because David loves Young Justice
as much as I do, probably.
Yes. So David also wanted to be part of the show but couldn't make it. But he has sent us some audio to play. So it's like he's here, but he's not really here.
No.
Greg, there's going to be a little more gushing. Also, I have to give out, if anyone listener, if you have not seen Young Justice, I have to issue this.
Spoiler alert.
Because there's a little bit of spoilers in his question.
Yes.
All right. So here is David's audio.
Hi, Greg. It's David from A Place to Hang Your Cape. I really wanted to be on the show tonight, but unfortunately, because of scheduling and time zones, I couldn't really make it. I did want to send across a few questions, mostly about Young Justice. Basically, when we did our interview on A Place to Hang Your Cape, I really wanted to keep it focused on the future of Young Justice and the Save Young Justice campaign. But I totally geek out on Young Justice. It's one of my absolute favorite shows. It's just everything about it was so great, and I did have a couple of questions, but they're really geeky, and I hope you won't judge me for totally just geeking out about it. So my first question is about one of my favorite moments from the whole series, and there's a major spoiler alert for people who haven't watched season 2 yet, but if you haven't, it's been a few years, what are you doing with your lives? Anyway, so my question is about when Aqualad kills Artemis in, or doesn't kill her, I guess, in, I think it's the 7th episode, Depths. That's one of my favorite episodes of the whole series. And that's one of my favorite moments. And the reason it's one of my favorites is because it's the very first time, I think, ever that a cartoon show managed to fake me out completely. Although in retrospect, I totally should have seen it coming. So my question is, how did you come up with the idea of killing or not killing or faking Artemis's death like that? And was there any backlash from it? Because obviously it is, even though it's bloodless, of course, it is a very violent scene. and a violent sort of idea of doing it this way. And I just want to know, you know, what was the reaction like at the time and sort of what was the thinking behind it? Was it something, you know, did you know from the start that you could get away with it, or was there anything pushing back on it? So that's my first question.
All right, I'm going to pause it there because then he keeps going on. But it's a really good question.
Well, I'm going to say, for starters, it wasn't entirely bloodless.
Yes, I remember.
We have a lot of.
I remember Aqualad putting some blood on Artemis in that episode.
Yeah, we had some discussion about the size of the blood stain. We basically got away with it from a standards and practices standpoint because within the same episode, we revealed that she wasn't dead. I think if we had sort of said, hey, we're not going to reveal that Tigris is Artemis for 3 or 4 episodes and that Artemis is alive, I don't think we would have gotten away with it. I mean, we didn't even try, so it's not, and we weren't interested in trying. It's not like we were censored in some way, but the fact is that I don't think we would have gotten away with it if you know, the episode ended with her dead.
Wow, yeah, that's interesting.
Even if we had said them, yeah, but in 3 episodes, we'll reveal that she's still alive, they still would have gone, no, this is too intense.
Wow.
I mean, that
audience, you can't leave those kids hanging.
If I remember correctly, you started with her dying to start that episode. So it was like a shocker. It was like, whoa, what the hell just happened in this episode?
Yeah, and to be honest, I wish we hadn't gone quite that far in the teaser. I wish that we had ended it with them doing the CPR. Mm-hmm. And I wish, you know, and again, now I'm using hindsight against myself. But the fact is that, you know, I think by showing that she was dead made the teaser more dramatic, but made the episode itself less dramatic. I think if we had shown the CPR going and we sort of cut with the audience not knowing if she's going to live or die, then those smarty pants fanboy types would have gone, well, of course they're going to save her, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the episode in essence flashes back a few hours and tells a story up to and through the CPR moment. And then when she is announced that she's dead, and she seems to be really dead for a good 3 or 4 minutes before we reveal that she is in fact alive, I think that would have been way more effective in hindsight.
Right.
But it doesn't change the question that he just asked, because the answer to that is that was the plan. When Kevin Hopps and Brandon Bietti and I sat down and broke season 2, that was always the plan. And to both kill her off and reveal in the same episode that she was alive and that Aqualad, in fact, was undercover. And we knew that a lot of people would be suspecting that Aqualad was undercover.
Double agent, yeah.
And some would be more convinced than others. Mm-hmm. You know, he had 2 good reasons for switching sides. One was the discovery of who his father was, and the other was the death of Aqua Girl.
Tula, right? Yep.
And so we thought those are pretty believable reasons, and yet we knew that there would be some, you know, smarty pants guys out there who would be right with us and going, no, no, he's faking it. but, you know, when we introduced him, or reintroduced him, I should say, in the fight with Superboy and in the previous episode and everything like that, I think it was fairly convincing. I think some of those people got at least less sure.
You had me, Greg, you had me convinced for sure. I thought Aqualad had turned, and the line where he goes, blood is thicker than seawater, when he's getting away from Nightwing.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy's turned. He's on the other side. And his reasons, as you had mentioned, were so legitimate that it was like, I could see this guy turning. But you touched upon plans, and I wanted to get into season 2, you did the 5-year time jump. Was that always within the plan to do a 5-year time jump? And if it was, why a 5-year time jump?
I don't know. The number 5 was always the plan, but the time jump was always the plan.
Oh.
And we pretty quickly, certainly
because I hated you at episode 1. I was like, why did they do this?
Yeah, that was the idea. I mean, I don't want to, I want to be clear on that. There are things we do that we want the fans to be pissed off about.
Okay.
Not because we're trying to piss them off, but because the half the fun of it is then winning them back over.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, some people we didn't. You know, some people, in fact, I know for a fact, saw that first episode and were so pissed off that they gave up the show completely.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I kind of feel like that's your loss, because if you had stuck with us, you would have seen Wally, and you would have seen Artemis, and you would have seen Aqualad, and you would have seen why it was so important for us to jump 5 years. Mm-hmm. Plus, you would have gotten all these additional characters that we could not have introduced if we hadn't jumped 5 years. But the main reason to do it, always, and why it was the plan from day one to do a time jump, was that, you know, we were telling a story that was very grounded, or as grounded as a story can be, that has science fiction and fantasy elements and superheroes in it. And what that meant is that the first season was 6 months. It ran from July 4th to January 1st. And season two ran from January 1st to July 4th.
Oh.
So the idea was to tell a year in the life, except that we put 5 years in the middle. But because we're telling the story more or less in real time, you know, sometimes between episodes a week passes, sometimes 2 weeks, that kind of thing,
right.
Sometimes a day. Hell, between one episode, it was literally like 15 minutes. But because we were doing that and we're telling a story about coming of age, about growing up, you can't tell a story about kids growing up that only covers 6 months of their lives,
exactly.
Or even only covers a year of their lives. A lot can happen to a kid in a year, particularly a kid like Dick Grayson or Wally West or McGann Moores, certainly. But you can't see them grow up.
Yeah.
You can't see them come of age in that short a time period. So the only way to do it was to do the time jump.
That makes sense.
I don't know that we settled on 5 years instantly, like right from day one. But we knew we were going to do a time jump, and pretty early on, we figured out that 5 years was what we needed.
That was the most intriguing thing. Like, I was opposite of Anthony. I was so intrigued because I was like, whoa, what happened in those 5 years? And now you're kind of re-meeting these characters, but they're different. And, you know, your mind just starts going, like, what did these guys go through?
Right.
And then you slowly find out, and that was so great. Let's get to, speaking of the second season, I think this David Malofsky's second question has to do with that. Here it is.
In? My second question is a bit more general. It's about the series as a whole. So another one of my favorite things about it is that you did a really good job of spreading out the introductions of the different characters. And I wanted to know, specifically with Zatanna and Blue Beetle, how did you choose the way that you would introduce them, and also bringing Blue Beetle's story into such a big deal? So I guess it's a two-part question. So with Zatanna in the first season and adding her into the group sort of late, and Artemis sort of late, what was the thinking behind that? Because I remember at the time the show had come out and it was like Artemis is on the team, and then I watched the first episode and I was like, where's Artemis? The question is, I'm going to boil it back down. How did you decide when to introduce each character, and how did you decide when to focus on specific characters, and sort of what was the thinking about that and surrounding all of that? And I hope this didn't get, I'm trying to keep the geekiness down a little bit. I might think of another question later on instead of another one, but just want to say, you know, thanks for, you know, speaking with us, and I really, really love Young Justice. Talk to you soon, and I look forward to hearing your answers.
I'm not sure I remember.
Okay, so I'm going to start by saying that he didn't keep the geekiness down.
No, he didn't.
No, not at all.
He got a little wordy there, David.
But I'm going to also say, I don't know why that's a goal. Like, given where we are
right.
And what we're talking about, I'm not sure why he was so determined to try to keep the geekiness.
Yeah, that's a good question,
too.
It's called the Jock and Nerd Podcast.
Unfortunately for me, the nerds are running the world.
Yeah, jocks were coming after you.
So that aside, you know, I think it's a really great question. And the thing to keep in mind is that Brandon and I, Brandon Bietti was my partner on the show, Brandon being the smartest guy in animation ever. And Brandon and I, and then we brought Kevin Hopps on as a staff writer early on. You know, we wanted this to be organic. We wanted the introduction of the team to be organic. Now, the way we started developing the show was I came up with a list of something like 50 or 60 teenage DC Comics heroes.
Whoa.
And, you know, from all different eras. So, you know, there are four or five Robins on the list. You know, there are two or three Kid Flashers. There are four blonde female teenage Archers.
Yeah.
Because God knows three blonde female teenage Archers clearly wasn't enough to see. And we began to then narrow that down, that big list down to about a dozen or so names that seemed like really strong contenders to us. And then it became not just who are cool characters, but who, you know, it was about dynamics between characters. And so from that list of a dozen or so, we narrowed down. Well, first thing was is that a couple of those characters were initially off limits to us, and those were the two Wonder Girls. I'm not sure why. It had nothing to do with creative. It was a legal issue that DC had. They told us we couldn't use either of the two, Donna Troy or Cassie Sands. Wow, now, those rules went away midway through season one.
Oh.
But by the time they went away, season one was all locked in.
Right.
But that allowed us to bring Cassie into season two, and we'd even planned on bringing Donna into season two at the bridal shower episode and in the final episode. But then production concerns got in the way of us being able to bring in Donna and also Mary Bromfield. We weren't able to bring in for the same reason. They were, both of them were going to be at the bridal shower, and then both of them were going to be in the final episode. Mm-hmm. But because we didn't have time to do them in the bridal shower, they didn't already exist for the final episode, so they wound up not being in the season at all, which is too bad. You know, if you didn't know that that was our plan, then you'd never know.
Had no idea, Greg.
Didn't matter.
So what we came up with was a group of six characters that for us had a nice mix of characters with actual superpowers versus mad skills, characters who had a little bit of marquee value versus characters that were more obscure. We were obviously emphasizing characters, particularly in season one, who had mentors in the Justice League itself.
Right. Yep.
But also we were looking for characters who had secrets, and we were looking for characters who would be telling lies. And that defines who we chose. So, for example, for Brandon in particular, and I thank God he did, really pushed for Artemis.
Yeah,
Artemis, great.
And I was like, great, but I really want to get Speedy in there. So that sort of, again, defined things in a very organic sense, like who were the original sidekicks? And if you look literally at the very first Brave and the Bold issue, where the Teen Titans very first time appeared, it was Robin, it was Aqualad, and it was Kid Flash. Mm-hmm. And then the next guy to join was Speedy.
Ah,
I'm glad you included Speedy. He was such a dick towards me.
And so we wanted to pay tribute. That's why we did Mr. Twister in our first episode after the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to pay tribute to the origins of both the Teen Titans and the Young Justice comics and the New Titans and all the various incarnations of it. But we also wanted to create an organic team. So where we start with are these four teenagers, then Speedy quits. So we're down to three. And then we very gradually brought in the rest of the cast. So we introduced Superboy at the very end.
Yeah.
Of episode one.
Yeah.
We introduced Miss Martian at the very end of episode two. And then we had to wait to introduce Artemis until it was organic. And what that really meant, and again, there's spoilers here, is that we had to get past the fifth episode, Schooled, which is the episode where Artemis fires the arrow that saves Kid Flash's life.
Oh, yeah.
And because they need to think that that's Green Arrow at first who did that, then they realize that it wasn't Green Arrow, so they think it's Speedy. And then it turns out, no, it's neither of those. It's Artemis. And so we couldn't introduce her right out of the gate. And, you know, one of the things that we got slammed for, which I was okay with, was that why are, you know, in the first two episodes, why are we only using the male characters? How come there aren't any girls? And then, you know, they even got mad at us that we introduced Miss Martian only at the very end of that episode. It was like, why even bother introducing her if she's only going to appear in a cameo at the end? And, you know, I was okay with that because I think it's a legit concern. But I was also okay with it because I knew that by the end of the season, we were literally going to have a 50-50 split between guys and girls on the team.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we wanted to really solidify our six leads, you know, introduce Artemis late so that she was coming in late at a disadvantage, so that that would put more pressure on her, so that her need to keep her secrets would be larger.
Yeah.
And we also felt that, and I think this is true, that if you try and introduce 600 characters right from moment one.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Everyone's kind of confused.
Yes.
So by keeping it down really to three leads at the beginning, adding a fourth, adding a fifth, then adding a sixth, you have time to acclimate.
Yes,
to each character's addition. So then we get, you know, partway in, and we knew we wanted to do Zatanna. We wanted to do more with magic in the show. We had plans for Zatanna and Zatara and Dr. Fate. We knew we wanted to do all that stuff, but we had to do it at the right time. And we had to do it when it seemed to make sense. Now, when we said we were going to introduce Zatanna behind the scenes, there were a lot of people who were going, no, no, Zatanna's a Justice Leaguer. She's the wrong generation.
Right. Oh, my
God. I'm like, look, you know, now she is, but she's the daughter of Zatara.
Right.
And they're like, well, but Zatara's a whole generation behind. I'm like, well, now he is.
Yeah.
But keep in mind that when Superman came out, he came out before Zatara.
Right.
You know, and so Zatara was at one point in time more or less a contemporary of Superman and Batman and those characters.
Yeah.
But so when we revamped the world, in essence created what we called Earth 16, we said, well, you know, let's do this. And they were like, well, but why? And we're like, well, because here you've actually got the daughter of a hero. I mean, it's not Martian Manhunter's niece or Green Arrow's niece or Superman's clone or Bruce Wayne's ward, you know, or Aquaman's protege. We actually have the daughter of a hero here.
The stakes are high.
And she's an interesting character. And yeah, it raises the stakes. It raises the whole deal with the relationship between them to a whole different level than it is for these other characters. And so how could we not do that?
I don't know why they don't
plus,
just,
you know, fucking Zatanna. How can you not have her in the show?
Right. You gotta have it. She is so great. I don't know why the suits don't just trust the creatives sometimes. Just let you guys tell your story. That's why they hired you.
Well, Zatanna added an element to the show.
I'm not laying this on suits even. This is a lot of people who are just like, what are you doing?
Right. You know? She added to the show, though, because she's magic-based and everyone else had either superpowers or were, you know, archers or in Nightwing's or Robin's case at that point, he was just highly trained. But she added a new power set to the team, too.
Yeah, and she's just so much fun. I mean, just her personality is so much fun and is so different from both Artemis and Miss Martian's personalities. Mm-hmm. And that's what you want. You don't want to have, you know, the three girls on the team all with the exact same persona any more than you want the four guys on the team to have the same persona. And then the plan was, which we did, obviously, is that by the end of the season, we added Rocket, who brought yet a whole other dynamic to the show and also gave us the advantage of having someone who hadn't been there for 24 episodes so that we could actually explain things in a less artificial way because Rocket can sit there and go, in essence, what the fuck is going on here? And they would say, okay, here's what the fuck is going on here.
Yeah.
And it recaps for the viewer or anyone who comes in new, and yet it doesn't feel artificial because, in fact, she hasn't been here the whole time. But she also brings a very different personality to things, And of course, I love the character of Rocket so much. Yeah. And she brings in someone for whom, you know, the term sidekick isn't a dirty word.
Right.
It's what she, you know, at the time wanted to be. So that answers the first half of his question.
A long question.
Of the second half, you know, the idea is that, again, it's 5 years later, so let's be organic. Where would these people be? Well, Zatanna and Rocket would be on the Justice League by this time. And, you know, no one actually by this time was saying this to us, but I could see people going, well, Rocket was never on the Justice League. And I'm like, well, no, not in the comics. But in our world, it doesn't make sense that she wouldn't be.
Right. You eventually graduate to that team.
Right. And we also totally believed the idea that Nightwing and Superboy and Miss Martian, for reasons of their own, would stay with the team. Not because they weren't old enough at that point, but because that had become, for Miss Martian and Superboy, that was in essence their home.
Right.
Cave was their home, and that's where they felt comfortable. And for Nightwing, he had evolved to be the leader of that team, and they needed him. He felt he couldn't leave.
Well, Dick has a lot of mentorship qualities within him, too, so it would make sense that he'd want to do something like that.
So then we were like, okay, so who in this 5 years would have joined? And we came up with a list of characters who would have joined and left by that time.
Yeah.
And that included, obviously, Kid Flash and Artemis, but it also included our version of Donna Troy, which was Troya, our version of Captain Marvel Jr. and Mary Marvel, which was Lieutenant Marvel and Sergeant Marvel. And so there were certain characters, Tempest and Aqua Girl came and went for various reasons, including death, the second Robin. So in those 5 years, all those people were gone. So who was new? Who was there? And so we came up with a short list of characters that we thought would be there. You know, in other words, if Aqualad in theory has gone bad, wouldn't they want someone else from Atlantis on the teams? Thus Lagoon Boy. There's a new Robin, so of course he'd be on the team. You know, we were again looking at characters who had mentors, either on the team itself or in the Justice League. So obviously Wonder Girl would be there because Wonder Woman's on the Justice League. Batgirl and Robin would both be on the team because Nightwing's there and Batman's in the Justice League. So it's that kind of idea, basically. And then you've got Blue Beetle, which also makes sense because although the Ted Kord Blue Beetle's dead, he was on the Justice League before he died. So we put the new Blue Beetle on the team, but we also obviously had another agenda, which was that we knew that the Reach was going to be a major element of the series in the second season.
Mm-hmm.
And the Reach was actually we knew we wanted Blue Beetle, and then Mike Carlin suggested that we use the Reach as the major aliens in the season, which was a great suggestion.
Yeah, that was,
And so, you know, what we tried to do with Blue Beetle is a slow burn on that character. He's there from the first episode, and he's got a pretty big role in the first episode of season two. But it's not about the Reach. It's not about his backstory. He's just one of the new guys on the team,
right,
along with Robin and Lagoon Boy. But as the season progresses, Blue Beetle becomes more and more essential to the main thrust of the story because, in fact, his powers come from the Reach, and the Reach are going to be our big villains.
No, that was, I mean, Blue Beetle was
awesome. Blue Beetle
was
so great. The reveal, the Reach, like when they're working with
all the tech with Blue Beetle. Yeah. That was all. I mean, we could talk about Young Justice. Literally, for me, we could talk about this forever. I love the storylines. The fact that you treated the character so with such reverence, and it was for almost a mature audience, and the diversity of the characters. The characters was what sold me on the show. So, I mean, we could talk about this all day, but I know Imran wants to bring up what you're currently working on, the audiobook. So if we can get into that. Imran, I know you had a question about that.
Well, I love audio plays, and I know you got this on Kickstarter. Now my voice is being really weird. Hold on one second.
So you got the audiobook on Kickstarter, and If you want to just tell our audience what it's about, what you've been working on lately, and what we're interrupting.
Sure. I've written the first two novels in the series of novels. The first book's called, as you mentioned earlier, called Reign of the Ghosts. The second book is called Spirits of Ash and Foam. I'm working on the third book now. It's called Mask of Bones. But the first two books are out. You can get them on Amazon. You can go into any bookstore if they don't literally have them on the shelf the day you happen to walk in. You can go to the front desk and they can order them for you. You can also get them as ebooks. And I'm very proud of these novels. About a young girl who lives on a chain of Caribbean islands called the Ghost Keys, or the Ghosts for short. And her parents work is in the tourist service industry. They own and operate a bread and breakfast where Rain, the lead character, lives with her parents and her grandfather, so that she's, in essence, living in a hotel. And so, you know, the notion of real privacy doesn't exist for her. And she feels trapped. I mean, she lives in a tropical paradise, but she's always lived there, so she doesn't view it that way. She sees it as she's going to go through life, graduate high school, and spend her entire life on this small chain of islands, ushering tourists around. Even now, she's serving them breakfast every morning and making their beds on the weekends and working on her father's charter boat, cutting bait and stuff like that. And she just feels like that's going to be her whole life, and she feels trapped. And then she finds out that she's got this heritage, that she can communicate with the dead. She can see ghosts. She can talk to dead people. And she finds out she's got a mystery to solve, actually many mysteries to solve. She's got a quest. She's got a mission. And suddenly that small world that she thought she was in seems very large. Mm-hmm. And excuse me. And the books are completely intertwined with the mythology of the region. That's the mythology of the Taino people, or the indigenous people of the Caribbean before Columbus arrived. It's a fascinating mythology, an amazing pantheon of gods and goddesses and heroes.
Wow.
That almost nobody knows about.
Yeah.
You know, easily as interesting as Greek mythology or Norse mythology, which has been used in pop culture over and over and over again.
Yeah, too much.
You know, Taino mythology is, you know, obviously there are a lot of scholars who know about it. But from a pop culture standpoint, it's virtually unknown.
I was fascinated that you picked the Taino Indians, because are they extinct, or are there still people who identify as Taino Indians?
There are, particularly in Puerto Rico and other areas in the Caribbean. And there was a time when it was sort of thought that they were completely extinct, and instead they were more or less absorbed, and some of the culture survived.
Wow.
But again, they're, you know, I'm trying to, on the one hand, and I'm not trying to kid myself, I'm exploiting these myths.
Well,
I'm trying to do it in a respectful way. Diversity has always been a priority for me, going back at least as far as Gargoyles, if not further. And so, you know, I've got a heroine, Rain Cacique, who is the direct descendant of Taino chiefs and shamans. I've got her best friend, Charlie, who's African-American, their new friend, Miranda, who's Hispanic. I'm trying to show points of view that you don't often see.
I respect the diversity that you...
I mean, even in Young Justice, there's lots of diversity.
Oh, everything he does.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think you're exploiting. Like, I love fiction that's built on real mythology and then takes it from there, but you're bringing awareness to this culture of people that... You know, a lot of people don't know. I'll tell you, the only other place I've ever heard Taino Indians referenced, there's this independent hip-hop artist named Immortal Technique. He's really, like, anti-government, and he gets the truth out there. And he raps about the Taino Indian culture in one song. And, like, that's the only other place I had heard Taino. And then I looked it up, and it was so fascinating.
Can I get your opinion on something, Greg?
Yes.
Why do you think...
Because otherwise, why would I be on your show?
That's right? True, right?
Yeah. That's a dumb question, Anthony.
Well, we've been asking him just about what he's been working on. No, this will be a good question.
Okay.
Why do you think our mainstream culture always glamorizes only like Greek and Roman mythology, and we don't hear about the mythologies of, like, for instance, the Taino Indians or other cultures that have, you know, great mythology behind them?
Well, let's start with the fact that, as overused as they sometimes may seem to us, that the Greek and Norse myths, Egyptian myths, Roman myths are fucking great.
Yeah, they're awesome.
You know,
great stories.
It's not like we're sitting there going, why are they using this crap?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, no, this is all really good stuff.
Yeah.
So part of the reason is that. Mm-hmm. It's really good stuff, and there's a lot of it because we preserved Western culture in writing.
Yeah.
For centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries, which gives it a huge advantage because there's a mass of it that's easy to find, easy to access, and so kids get exposed to it. But, you know, there was a time when not many people knew the Norse myths at all. Mm-hmm. And even now, I would say Egyptian myths are better known than most mythologies, but not really well known. You know, there was a time when it was basically, you know, Greco-Roman, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, and then really Stan and Jack changed that. Mm-hmm. With Thor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Norse stuff, yeah.
And because when Thor came out, sure, there were people who knew Norse mythology, but no one was doing much with it.
Right.
You know, until Thor. And, you know, and I used that stuff, too. In Gargoyles, we did riffs on Greek myths. We did riffs on Egyptian myths. We did riffs on Norse myths.
Yeah.
And enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Now, part of it is the Western culture tradition is strong. Part of the reason it's strong is because it's in writing and has been for millennia. And that's a good reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The problem isn't that people are doing stuff with that. The problem becomes when they don't do anything else.
Yeah.
And there's not much of an excuse for it these days, particularly with the internet. It's not hard to research African mythology.
Yeah.
So Gargoyles, and we didn't even have the benefit of a full-fledged internet that exists today, Google search and that kind of thing. But we did stories based on Native American myths like Coyote and Raven. We did Anansi the Spider,
that's
African
awesome.
Myth in Gargoyles. We reached out. And that's what people should also be doing. I'm not sitting here saying, no more Greek myths, we're banning that. I don't believe that.
Right.
But if that's all we do, then the crime isn't that we're doing that. The crime is that look at all the great stories you're missing, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And when I stumbled a decade ago, or 15 years at this point probably, on the Taino mythology, it was like this door opened into another world. I'm like, holy shit, how come no one's ever done anything with this before?
Yeah, really.
And I feel blessed that I've got this wealth of power. You know, the terror is that someone's going to beat me to it. But, you know, even if they do, doesn't mean I can't do it too, because, as we've noted, there are upteen versions of Greek mythology. So I think, you know, we could handle two versions of the Taino. But still, I'd love to be first. I don't deny it. You know, I'd love to be the first guy who, and I don't think I've done it yet, even though Rain has a touch of the Taino mythology in its spirits, is completely interlaced with Taino mythology.
Nice.
But I don't think either of those books have reached a critical mass societally. Like, for the most part, even fans of mine, I'll go to a convention, I'll be selling the books, and people will come up and they're like, oh, I'm your biggest fan. I love Gargoyles. I love Young Justice. Oh, you wrote novels? You know, and I'm like, you know, I'm not mad at them, but it's frustrating because it's like I've been working so hard to promote these books and still even huge fans of mine don't even know I wrote them.
Right.
And we're talking about what I'm working on now. So leaping to that, I wanted to do an audio book of Reign of the Ghosts. But I had a dilemma. And the dilemma was that my lead character is Rain Cacique. She's a 13-year-old Taino girl. But my narrator is an adult male. First-person narration, adult male.
Yeah.
And most audiobooks, as I'm sure you know, is just one person, male or female, talented, but just reading the book. No sound effects, no music, no multiple actors, just one talented person reading the book and doing all the characters. And usually I'm fine with that. I listen to a lot of audiobooks. I particularly like Jane Austen and Charles Dickens. And usually the Dickens author, I mean, the Dickens narrator is a guy, because most of the characters are male.
English guy, probably.
Yeah, English guy, and he does the female voices, too, and yeah. A lot of Dickens' female characters are comedic or evil, and so he does a decent job at those as well, and then, you know, handles the two or three ingenue characters okay.
Right.
You know. And then, likewise, on the flip side, Jane Austen, you get a talented English female actor doing the narration. Most of the characters in Austen's book are female, and then a handful of guys, and this, you know, actress will do a damn good job at doing her best at doing the guys as well as the women. But for me, I'm like, well, I got two options here. I got a first person adult male narrator, so it doesn't work for me to have a female narrating the book, yeah, because it'll just be strange, because it's first person. It's not even a, you know, an omniscient narrator. He's not omniscient, but he's not third person omniscient. He's first person omniscient. And it's an unusual narrator, so you have to personify that guy. And or else it won't come across. But at the same time, he's not actually the lead. In fact, he's a pretty minor character.
Oh, wow.
The lead is Rain, and she's a 13-year-old girl. And I just couldn't see having this adult male, who, by the way, in the end turned out to be me who played it.
Oh, nice.
Trying to force his voice for most of the dialogue into the voice of a 13-year-old girl. I mean, oh my God, it just made me cringe.
It'll take you right out of it. Yeah.
So I was like, well, I'm not doing it that way. So I'm going to go back to what I know, which is, you know, I'm in animation. We get the actors all in a room together and we do it radio play style. Yeah. And I'm like, well, if I'm doing that, I got 30 characters. We cast 20 actors to play 30 characters. If I'm doing that, then I'm going to do music. I'm going to do sound effects. And it was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Hugely fun, but way more expensive than a standard audiobook. You can do a standard audiobook for a few thousand dollars.
Sure.
This thing cost us 60 grand and counting.
Wow.
Now, we've got a phenomenal cast. We've got Edward Asner. We've got
awesome.
Maria Sirtis, Brent Spiner, got Vanessa Marshall, who played Black Canary in Young Justice, plays Harrison Dula. She was Mary Jane Watson in Spectacular Spider-Man. Man. We've got Steve Bloom, who was the Green Goblin in Spectacular Spider-Man, and is Zeb on Star Wars Rebels. Got the amazing, legendary Jim Cummings. We've got the Spectacular Spider-Man himself, Josh Keaton. We've got Blue Beetle, Eric Lopez.
Wow.
We've got Static, Brighton James. We have a truly stellar cast of 20 actors in this. As you mentioned, we did a Kickstarter. We funded. That's done. So I'm not asking people for donations anymore, thank God.
And congratulations on funding that, too. I mean, that itself is a full-time job to get that thing going.
It really is. That was the most brutal part of the whole process, frankly. I mean, making the thing has been a blast, truly. I mean, a joy. I got the composers are dynamic music partners, Michael McQuistion, Christopher Carter, Lola the Rhythmist, who are also the composers of shows like Justice League Unlimited, Young Justice, Spectacular Spider-Man, Avengers. These are amazing composers, three people who met working on the original Batman, the animated series under Shirley Walker. And they've composed nearly 4 hours of original scoring for Reign of the Ghosts. And it is stellar stuff. I mean, just truly brilliant music. We've got the same people who did sound effects for Gargoyles, for Spectacular Spider-Man, working on the sound effects on these. And we just finished literally Monday of this week, the 28th. We finished the final mix.
Wow. It's done.
It's totally done. The production is done. Now, the next step for us is, and this is how we're spending October, is we have to fulfill all those Kickstarter rewards.
Yeah.
So the first step for us is that we are having a special edition box set CDs printed out. Because for the most part, starting in late October, early November, this is going to be sold electronically only.
Okay.
Via Audible.
Oh, it will be on Audible. Great. That's great.
Right. And so anyone can get it. It's not going to be horrifically expensive. And I really do hope a lot of people listen to it because it's truly, truly great work. And I know I sound biased when I say that, and I am, but I've also played what we've done for people who had nothing to do with the project, who aren't related to me, industry people, and everyone's been massively impressed with it. And again, this is the work of many, many people, musicians, composers, actors, directors, producers, sound effects people, audio mixers, all sorts of people were involved in this production. It's not just me at all. It's very much a team effort. And I couldn't be prouder of it. But what we're doing this month is fulfilling rewards. Our goal is to try and get all the rewards either fulfilled by the end of October, or a couple of the really high-end rewards were dinners with cast and crew. I may not be able to get those dinners done by the end of October, but the goal is at the very least to have them scheduled by the end of October.
What a great reward that is, too, for a fan, right, or a backer. That's great.
And so we are really excited about that. And then the goal is, again, that by the end of October or the beginning of November, to have it up on Audible so that everyone can hear it.
That's awesome.
So first we have to get it out to the people who actually helped us pay for it via Kickstarter.
Hey, Greg, I know you told us you had an hour, so we're at an hour 5. Are you good? Do you need to go?
I'm good for about another 10 minutes.
Okay.
All right. I just wanted to say this project sounds amazing. And for the listener, if you are a fan of any of Greg's work, Gargoyles or Star Wars Rebels or Young Justice, there's no way you're not going to like this. It's amazing how you've pulled the talent from all your jobs and kind of got everybody together. Definitely send us the link. I will also put links in our show notes to the books. And when this thing goes up, I'm definitely buying it, and I'd love to probably review it on the show.
That'd
it
awesome,
sounds
man.
Amazing. What is the runtime, the final runtime on this, Greg?
It's just under 4 hours. It's like 3 hours and 56 minutes or something like that.
It's fantastic.
I love it.
Yeah. No, it's
longer the better.
Yeah. I love long-form audio content, and like audio plays are great because it's like theater of the mind. It's like a really awesome produced podcast, you know?
What it really is, it's a and this is how we produce it. It's a 4-hour animated movie.
Yeah.
With everything but the animation.
Yeah. You provide the animation in your head. That's
right. And that's the idea. And that's what everyone sort of felt in listening to it, is that it just really comes to life in your head. The performers are great. We've got a wonderful young actor named Brittany Womaleali to play Rain. Brighton James, who was Static on Young Justice, plays her best friend Charlie. And they're the two leads, but the whole cast is really just amazing.
That is a star-studded cast, man. Like, yeah. You can't deny that. There's a YouTube channel called Cape Swoosh Productions. You might like this. They do similar things with comic books. Like, they did a whole audio-produced Killing Joke, and it's really well done. I was very impressed. So that's what this reminded me of, and I'm dying to listen to this now.
I'm dying for everyone to hear it.
Yeah. No, well, as soon as it comes out, let us know. We'll get the word out, and I'd love to do a whole show on it.
Because the
beauty of your work, the complex storylines, the character development, it's not when you're a kid, when you watch this stuff, you feel like they're treating you like an adult, mm-hmm. and it suddenly connects something special. All this also reminds me of, I wanted to ask you if you are a fan of this one old animated show. It's the one show that growing up, it was the first time a cartoon had a running storyline for me. It's the first time characters died and stayed dead. This show was called Robotech. You guys...
I wasn't a fan when it came out. I was working, so, you know, I wasn't... And this was before I had a VCR, let alone a DVR, or let alone, you know, Netflix or anything like that. So I didn't see it when it originally came out. But I briefly worked for Harmony Gold for a while, and so I watched the whole run of, or the whole original run of the three Robotech series. Yep. My kids and I watched them all back to back, and, you know, it's great stuff.
They're so great, man.
But I didn't see it as a kid. You know, in other words, I didn't see it. Well, first of all, I wasn't a kid when it came out as an adult, but I also didn't see it when it first came out because I was working at DC Comics at the time, and I had, you know, it was a full-time job. I wasn't around in the afternoons to watch it.
That's what all your stuff, like, it just reminds me of when I discovered Robotech, just the fact that you're not talking down to the audience. You're giving them benefit of the doubt. You really got to work to watch these shows, and the payoff is amazing. And like, I see this in all your projects, man. It's you are a master storyteller. Thank you so much for your time, Greg. This has been so cool. It's been an honor. I hope you had a good time, and I love that you're on so many podcasts. You're so like open, and you love answering questions. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm an attention whore. I don't know.
this medium is perfect for you. You should. Here's my thing. I always tell people, hey, you should have your own podcast. But did you consider releasing Reign of the Ghost like chapter by chapter as a podcast, as a tease, or some kind of model like that? Because there's a lot of authors that do that with their work, and then they end up they sell their books, and their podcast is also kind of popular.
Yeah, I am. Among many flaws in my character, I am a borderline Luddite. you know, it's like, I can't remember, but maybe you even asked me like, hey, we can Skype the interview. I'm like,
Yeah, listener, we're calling him on his phone.
you know, so the idea of on an ongoing basis having to deal with technology just, scares me.
Hey, technology's scary, man.
Like I was a caveman. you know, seeing fire for the first time. So, you know, the idea here is that that we put it up on Audible.
Yeah.
It's a one, you know, I only have to do that once. and then it's there and it's available, and hopefully we can bring people to it. And word will spread, and it'll kind of grow, which is what I hope, not just for the audio play, though obviously for that, but also for the series as a whole, because I really do think, you know, and I'd love to do an audio play version of Spirits of Ash and Foam, because it is, even more so than Rain, a much more involved book, got much more depth, much more Taino mythology, a really exciting story, great characters. I'm really proud of that book, too, but it's twice as long as Rain.
Oh, boy.
Which means that literally it would be twice as expensive.
Yep, I was just thinking
to produce it. So, in order to be able to produce an audio play version of Spirits of Ash and Foam, I need Rain to succeed, so that I can use. I don't need Rain to profit from the standpoint of me putting money in my bank account.
Right.
I need Rain to profit so that I can take all that money and put it directly into the audio play version of Spirits. And that's the goal. I mean. Yeah. I'm not doing this audio play to get rich. I'm doing this audio play because I wanted it. I felt that fans would really like it. And from a monetary standpoint, all the money made off this audio play will go right into the fund to do the same thing for Spirits.
Oh, that's great.
Let's hope it does.
Yeah,
really
I hope you do that one. I mean, I love when, you know, creator-owned properties are always – my favorite, because this is your baby. It's your passion project. There's nobody over your shoulder telling you what you can and can't do. And just that feeling is amazing. So before we let you go, Greg, can you let the listener know if somebody wants to say hi or have a question, where can they find you?
Yeah, the best place to find me probably is on Twitter. I'm at Greg_Weissman, Weissman. And I, if you tweet me, I try to answer every night. I'm only on Twitter about half an hour a day, but every night I try to go through my feed, Twitter feed, and answer anyone who addresses me directly.
That's awesome.
Obviously,
that's
if you've got an in-depth question,
right,
Twitter is not an ideal place to answer an in-depth question. And I also have a website, which is called AskGregWeissman.com. You can go there. For starters, I've been answering questions there for 18 years, something like that.
Wow.
And we've archived all the answers, and the archive is searchable.
Whoa.
So the first thing you should do, odds are, any questions you've got, whether it's about Young Justice or Gargoyles or Spectacular Spider-Man, the odds are it's in the archive already. You don't have to wait for an answer. You can just search for it and you'll find it. But if you happen to have come upon a question that I never answered, you can post that question. I'll admit, I'm about a year behind answering questions.
Oh, man.
Because I get so many. But I do get to them all eventually. And so you can ask me questions there at AskGregWeissman, all one word, .com. And then finally, I'm also on Facebook. So you can friend or follow me on Facebook. But I'll admit, I do not understand Facebook. I don't.
I don't
understand how it works. I feel like I don't see everything that gets up there, even things that are directed to me. I don't always feel like I see them. It seems very haphazard to me. So again, if you want to talk to me directly, I recommend either Twitter or AskGregWeissman.com.
That's awesome.
And
listener,
I'll have links in the show
notes.
Yeah,
all these links are right in the show notes, right in your podcast app. Very easy. And Greg is very active on Twitter. Like, I checked out his page, man. It's so great how you respond to the fans. And it's everyone loves the guy on Twitter. So thanks so much for your time.
Well, that's not true.
No?
That's
maybe,
definitely not true.
Maybe I didn't read far down enough on the feed there. Are you got a Twitter beef with someone? Are you in a Twitter beef with someone? Is that what's going on?
Over the years, the last couple of years, I've had a handful of beefs here and there. But also, you know, one thing I won't do is I won't spoil shows, even shows that are theoretically over, like Gargoyles or Young Justice, because I have hopes to come back to them someday in one form or another. And people say, yeah, well, how likely is that? And the fact is that... you know, I did Gargoyles 21 years ago.
Wow.
And then about 8 years ago, something like that, suddenly we had the opportunity to do new Gargoyles comics, and we did 18 issues, 3 trade paperbacks worth for SLG.
That's awesome.
And, you know, it was frustrating on one level that I had revealed so much.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, it's like it was great for the hardcore fans to finally see these stories I have alluded to.
Right.
But it was frustrating for me as a writer to know that they already knew how some of the stuff ended.
Yeah.
But how, it's like, but I like your theories. Like, you just don't say shit. Cause then you're like, see, I shouldn't have fucking said anything when I said something, but you never know. You never know.
So now I just am going to take it for granted that someday I'll get to do Young Justice again in some way, shape, or form. Might be comics, might be, I have no idea, and maybe it'll never happen, but I'd rather assume that it is going to happen and I have to keep those secrets and give away those secrets and then find out, oh, I get to do it again.
Hope is a powerful thing.
So, you know, people often ask for spoilers and I just won't give them.
No, that's smart. That makes sense.
And, you know, about season 3 of Young Justice or whatever. And some people get that and respect it, and other people get kind of pissed off.
they don't screw those people. And, they don't get it.
You know, it's the internet, so there's this entitlement thing. I don't know if you've heard about it, but
I might have.
You know, it's there.
I blame the millennials. These millennials, they think everything their shit don't stink, and they know the answer to everything, and they just
shut up, Emma.
You know, I don't know that it's restricted to any one generation. To me, what I blame is the anonymity.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people feel free since they're not looking at you face to face and often not even using their real name.
Exactly.
They feel free to say incredibly rude things that they would never say to you in person. I never have any problems like this when I go to a convention.
No, they would never say that in your face.
Conventions are terrific, but often, not always, but often enough on the internet, people are willing to just be ridiculously rude.
These people are called keyboard warriors, Greg.
You get that asshole who says avatar is still an egg and he has one follower and it's just to like hate on people. Like that's why the block button is there. It's very helpful.
Yeah, I don't, I try not to block people unless it really gets out of control. I don't feel like people need to agree with me all the time. That's not the point, but we can disagree and still be civil.
Wait, you can be civil on Twitter? I didn't know that was a thing.
It's doable, yeah.
It's possible? Shit.
Anyway, this is a tangent, but yeah.
That's okay. We love tangents. But Greg, I don't want to take up your time. If you got to go, thanks for coming on, man.
We really appreciate your time so much. Good luck with everything, and good luck. We didn't even get to good luck with the relaunch of Starbrand and Nightmash from Marvel, two characters we love, and the whole Avengers run we've been reading. And I'm really excited for that book. I'm definitely going to check that out.
All right. Well, when that comes out, I'll come on again if you want me.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Geek Moment.
You get one of those. That would be fantastic because we're huge. We've been into Hickman's Avengers run going into this, and I love these two characters so much now. Like, their reintroduction has been fabulous.
I'm having a great time. I'm in the middle of writing issue 2 now, Domo's penciling and inking issue 1. Stuff looks fantastic.
When does that come out?
I honestly don't know. I think I should know. Like, I don't think it's a secret. I think it's like either went in one ear and out the other, or they just neglected to tell me or something like that. And I'm not sure, so I don't want to blame anybody. It could just literally, because I'm old. My memory's failing. Just be me. I feel like I should know when it's coming out, and I don't.
We'll just say soon. Their publishing schedule for Secret Wars, though, has gotten a little wacky. They've had to – they're push. It's going to end after the all-new relaunch starts. Some stuff got pushed back and delayed. So that's probably why it's a little up in the air. But I'm going to say definitely before the end of the year, probably.
Right.
Maybe.
I swear to God, I have no idea.
Who knows?
I know my – writing schedule. I know what that is. Yeah. When my scripts are due. And I figure, if I get those in on time, then hopefully the book will be out on time and we'll all be good. But I have not locked into my head when it actually comes out. And like I said, they may have announced it already for all I know. I cannot remember.
We got this thing called Google.
We'll look it up. We'll look it up. We'll put the answer right in the show notes of this episode.
There you go.
Everyone can be. But man, thanks for the offer coming back. You got me very excited now because that'll be.
Oh, and I should also mention Star Wars Kanan because I'm.
Yes.
I've written my script through issue 10. I'm about to literally tonight start writing issue 11, and that book has been really great. In particular, working with Pepe Larraz, the artist on the book, whose stuff is so gorgeous, I really feel like I could write a shopping list and the book would be amazing.
So you're writing both of those books like concurrently now?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he's working on the audio.
You're a busy man, dude.
Busy motherfucker.
Yeah, I also have a day job.
What?
I'm working on, as a staff writer, on a preschool show for Nick Jr. called Shimmer and Shine.
Wow.
What are we doing with our lives?
This is the hardest working man in the show business right here. So, I was going to ask what you got coming up, but like you just got things going on always. I don't think you've stopped working ever.
No, I mean, I can't afford to stop working. I got a mortgage and two kids in college. I can't.
We don't want him to stop working, though. His stories are so good that as long as he keeps
more
going.
More Greg Wiseman stories, definitely.
I might like to stop working someday, but I can't afford to yet, we'll see.
Yeah, I bet even when you stop, you're still going to want to tell stories.
Well, when you retire, you'll have earned it for sure.
And then you could tell all the stories that you were saving at that point.
Well, thanks, guys. It's been fun.
Awesome, Greg.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on, man. Thanks,
awesome,
Greg.
Thanks. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye.
Jackie Nerd! Pardon the interruption. I have some news which I believe you will find most interesting.
Would you like to hear the latest in Marvel television, film, video games, and comic books?
Or are you looking for some ideas on what to pick up on New Comic Book Day? Well, join Mike and Eric on Mighty Marvel Geeks every Saturday night on Sorcerer Radio and every Sunday on the Weeby Geeks Network for all things Marvel.
There is a matter that requires your attention.
Mighty Marvel Geeks, assemble!
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Do you like superheroes? Do you like comics? Do you like film? Do you like comics and films about superheroes? Well, then you're in luck, because we here at A Place to Hang Your Cape have everything for you. We've got reviews. We've got interviews. We've got list articles. We've even got a few videos coming up. Anything you could possibly want that's relating to superheroes, we have. A Place to Hang Your Cape, where superheroes go to hang their cape. The name is self-explanatory, really. I don't know why I have to explain it, but there you go. Find it at ap2hyc.com.
The H stands for H.
The H.
Doc and Nerd.
Dude, that was so awesome.
How awesome was he?
Greg Wiseman is the man. Very cool. Loved.
I really could have talked to him forever about anything we were I just liked hearing him talk.
Yeah, and he's a geek like us. Like, he clearly is loves the source material and has passion for the characters. And I mean, he hasn't made a bad thing, right?
No, nothing he's made has been shit.
That was so awesome.
I just want to clue the listener in, by the way. Midway through the show, Imran loses his voice.
Well, so there's a part where I get a little I choke up and my eyes start tearing.
He wanted to edit that out, but I was like, nope.
And this is actually the second time this has happened in one of these interviews. And Anthony, being the observant jock that he is, you figured out why. And you're absolutely right.
It's when you don't talk.
When I am silent, my voice is just like, fuck this. I'm out of here.
I think what we're going to have to do is make that our goal, listener, is not have Imran talk for a while.
No.
So that he jumps in and he's like, whoa.
Then when I come back, I'm like, so, how?
It's either that or I interrupt our guests and go, Imran, you have to say something. Just say something. Blah, 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 blah.
I think that's what you have to do. Be like, just whoever we have, be like, hold on, I got to stop you for a second. Otherwise, we're going to have a medical condition.
Otherwise,
with
Imran's voice runs away.
You're like, hold on, shut up for a second. Imran needs to talk. Otherwise, he won't be able to speak. Wow, that's so weird. That, why does that do that? I'm going to have to, I don't know. That's weird. I drank all the water and it still didn't help. And I was like coughing up a lung. Plus the e-cig probably didn't help either.
No, this probably would have should have gone in the after show rant, but what's going to go right
whatever.
Here? We won't have an after
Listen,
show
we
rant.
Gotta thank again. You just heard their promo, David Malosky, yep. A Place to Hang Your Cape. This interview wouldn't have been possible without his awesome networking. There's a great interview. I'll put it in the show notes on ap2hyc.com with Greg Wiseman talking about more Young Justice.
Yep.
And man. You guys all heard that. He offered to come back, right? We have proof.
We have proof. We have audio proof that he offered to come back.
That is goddamn
Geek Boner.
Amazing. And I can't wait till Starbrand and Nightmask comes out because, you know, those
great
were
characters.
You know, those were from the new universe.
Yeah.
That nobody – I remember when New Universe
it's
came
very,
out.
Very, very vague
And it
stuff.
Did not sell well. No. But I remember the black – everything had the same kind of title border to connect it. It was all new universe titles. I don't think I ever read any.
You could see how far back Hickman's drawn upon some of his stories.
Yeah, right?
Grabbing new universe stuff, which no one gave a shit about.
Right? And, like, again, I said it before, like, Hickman has left so many awesome pieces in this thing to play with. Wiseman gets to play in the Hickman sandbox a little bit.
Speaking of – well, we're going to have Wiseman back on. We should also do a show with Eric Garneau when Hickman's run on Secret Wars is over.
Ah, he can explain that to everyone.
Well, and we can just geek out.
We can geek out and pick it apart. Yeah. And
so yeah. We've just got two more shows to do.
Yeah, lots of shows. Also, listener, you may have noticed we're doing live TV episodic reviews on Blab.
Yeah.
You can join the Blab. Just visit jockandnerd.com/blab. You can watch the replays there. You can subscribe to any scheduled blabs. You'll see them there. And you can jump in where we, at the end of the show, we open it up to the blabbers and we just geek out with people. We've done two so far. And what'd you think? Have you had fun? Because I kind of threw you in this.
They've
and,
been fun. Yeah. No, the thing is blab has made the word puppet would I say derogatory term?
It's
now?
It's maybe slightly offensive.
It's
to,
like it's
to
like
a
calling
kind.
A little person the M word.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but
in this case, it's made the word puppet well, a derogatory.
And it's
term.
The only place you're going to see.
So you'll know what we're talking about if you look at our
blabs.
Yeah.
You will see Rug Boy finally revealed to the world that he is fantastic.
Yeah, he's something. He's something that we don't want to refer to him as anymore. So if you watch our blab, you'll know what we're talking about.
So go to jockandnerd.com/blab. But in the meantime, if you want to send us an audio comment about any of this, visit our SpeakPipe page. There's a link in the show notes at jockandnerd.com/46, or just go to speakpipe.com.
Is that how Malofsky sent us his audio?
He actually, what he did, he was very smart. He just used his phone, recorded some audio in the voice recorder, and he emailed it to show@jockandnerd.com.
Look how I transitioned.
That's it. Great. Yeah. See? That's why we have
– oh, shit.
That's why we got the jock.
Wowie zowie.
You can also tweet or Facebook us. Twitter is jockandnerdcast. Facebook is just the name jockandnerd. And then also Clamor. You can Clamor us.
We're on Clamor. I was at my buddy's house, and I had his Android phone, and he had Beyond Pod, this app, on there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, you should – he's like, see if you're in the Beyond Pod. And actually, I didn't know.
We are.
I put it in the search. I subscribed him to our show right on Beyond Pod. So Android users, there is an Android link in the show notes. If you have an app installed and you click on it, it will bring up that Android app, and you can subscribe there. Or if you use Beyond Pod, it's a pretty cool looking app. We are in there. Just search the Jock and Nerd Podcast. And of course, iTunes. We'd love it if you drop by the iTunes and give us a rating and a reviewing. You can go to jockandnerd.com/review. It'll take you right there.
But what we always say,
the most important thing to do,
is just tell a friend.
That's all you got to do, man.
You should just tell them. You should get your finger ready. Just go up to someone, whisper in there and go,
Jock and Nerd.
Listen.
That wasn't really a whisper, but no. They'll get the message.
Jock and Nerd.
I hit the wrong button.
But it's okay. They'll get the message.
Here's the thing, listener. How many people have grew up and loved Gargoyles? How many people do you know watch Amazing, The Spectacular Spider-Man, yeah. Young Justice, Star Wars Rebels, that's still on?
Who's reading the books he's currently writing, right? Star Wars Canon?
Canon, the last Padawan, who's from Star Wars Rebels.
You showed me that
Star Wars Rebels.
Like, that's the guy we're fucking talking to.
Yeah, his name, I bought it. I was like, dude, his name's on this book. And then the Star Brand Night Mask. This man is just a great storyteller. Everybody loves his work. They might not know who he is, but if you know a fan of Gargoyles, send him this show. Mm-hmm. Turn them on to the Jock and Nerd. We would appreciate it.
Yep. You gonna hit a button? You gonna hit some music?
I was gonna hit something.
That's okay.
No, I think we're good. This show was great. It's definitely 100%
Runway approved.
So we're gonna return you to your regular scheduled program. Thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging out. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the Jock.
And he's the Nerd.
And you know what? We'll hear you next time. I'll be honest, I was a little bit nervous beforehand, more so than usual.
Are we doing an after show rant right now?
I don't know. Are we? Is anybody – hold on. Nah, nobody's listening. Listening.
Tell us how you feel.
But it went really good, dude. I love Wiseman's awesome.
I knew you were nervous. Cool. That's why I said when I got out of the car, he's just a man.
But I was very excited, and I can't thank David enough. He's gonna love this show.
You know what reminds me of when I say he's just a man? Rocky IV. Rocky's fighting Ivan Drago.
Okay,
cuts him. He hits him in the – Rocky hits Ivan Drago in the face, and he cuts him across the eye.
Yeah.
And he goes back to the corner, and the cornerman yells at Rocky. He goes, you see, he's not a machine. He's human. You cut him. You hurt him. And then on the other side, Ivan Drago in like Russian – and I'm going to do like a weird Russian accent. He doesn't even say it in English, but he goes, he's not a man. He's like a piece of iron.
Oh, my God. He was saying that about Rocky, right? Yeah.
And then the other side saying, he's just a man.
Oh, my God.
Up until that point, Ivan Drago had been built up as this unstoppable monster.
Yeah, he was like a Terminator.
He was like juiced on steroids.
I remember, I think it was the Rocky video game where I couldn't get past Ivan Drago.
Oh, he's a motherfucker.
Yeah. You fought all the guys in the movies, but
Movies, in Rocky IV, they wanted to film the boxing scenes to be really authentic.
Okay.
So Stallone was like, hit me, like to Dolph Lundgren, like really hit me.
Oh, shit.
And he hit him in the chest.
Oh, no.
And I don't know if he had like a collapsed lung, but he was like bruised sternum out for a while.
Oh, my God. That's not good.
Because Dolph Lundgren is like 6'6".
Dude, he was huge. He's jacked in that movie.
And he's like actually trained in combat.
Yeah.
Like has like a background in traditional martial arts.
He could have fucking killed Stallone right there.
I mean, yeah.
That's a lot of insurance money on that.
Rocky IV, a lot of people.
It's the worst one, no?
No, everyone hates Rocky Five.
Five? Yeah, really?
Rocky Five. Yeah.
I haven't seen Five.
Rocky Five, there's no actual boxing match at the end.
Oh.
His kid's a little punk.
It doesn't follow the formula. Creed's going to be awesome, though.
Creed's going to look good, yeah. Creed's looking really good. But Rocky Four holds a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
Because of all the training scenes and just the whole USA-Russia aspect.
I remember loving the scene how he trained and how Drago trained with all his machines, and Rocky just had like a rope and a tree.
And like picking up rocks.
Yeah, he was just
wheelbarrows
like
and
fucking
stuff.
CrossFit style, like old school caveman style.
You could say that Rocky invented CrossFit.
The original CrossFit.
The original CrossFit.
Pick this up, put it here.
When are you going to start doing CrossFit again?
I don't know. I got to get back.
Weren't you like hardcore into it?
I did it for like a couple of years.
What do you think about the people, and I might be one of those people, maybe, maybe not, that think CrossFit's actually bad for you?
Well, everything's bad for you. You just got to do it in proper doses. You have to do it with a good trainer. You got to know your body.
Are those Olympic lifts meant to be lifted in high repetition?
It depends on – I think so. It depends on the weight.
Right.
If you do lightweight –
Are you supposed to do heavy and high repetition?
Well, you don't do heavy and high repetition. You do low sets of a little bit when it gets heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But for the Metcon –
Do you have to be a certified trainer to be a CrossFit trainer?
Yeah, but apparently it's
– A lot of it's a little shady, right?
Apparently it's kind of easy to be a certified trainer.
Like my friend who
– That might have changed now.
It might have.
But back in the day, like level one certification, apparently anybody could just fucking
That's what I worry about, because like my friend who I'm not going to throw – I'm not going to name her name, but she's a school teacher and doesn't have any certified training. She – did CrossFit for like 6 months.
She's
and
a trainer?
Now she's a trainer, yeah.
Well, all I know is the places I've been
all
to.
All the boxes are different, though.
They are. Yeah. The one where I went to a lot, and then I've all been to a lot of random ones with my sister, they've all been very good trainers. They're there with you. They make mm-hmm. sure they know what your limit is, what your injuries are. They watch your movements. But you got to start somewhere. Like, I think learning Olympic lifts is beneficial for a lot of people mm-hmm. because it is – It is the natural way to move heavy weight. You learn how to use your body in everyday life. Like after I did that, anytime I'd move a box, I fucking power clean the fucking box off my shoulder. And I was like, whoa, I just fucking move this weight.
Well, you should definitely lift boxes with your legs. A lot of people use their back.
But it's not even the legs. It's your hips. Yeah. All the power from everything comes from your hips. It's amazing.
No, your hips are – yeah, even in fighting.
So then like the box jumps help you work on your explosive movement. Mm-hmm. Then you mix in like toe touches and a couple of hand cleans. You do a couple of rounds of that. You're working your whole body.
Well, I think the big appeal of CrossFit too, besides the fact that a lot of people just get ridiculously ripped, is that whole like box family aspect where it's like, this is my family.
The family is
this
nice.
Is our box.
The family is nice.
We all push each other.
It's a little cultish. Yes.
It's very cultish.
I drank the Kool-Aid. I was told in the very beginning, I would like check in on Facebook every fucking time. My sister's like, enough fucking in checking in at the CrossFit. Nobody fucking cares. I'm like,
we're
what?
CrossFit.
Right.
We're CrossFit Raiden. We're the best.
But look, let me tell you where I came from and why I liked it. At the time, I never exercised. I walked. That was it. On a trail. Like, that was it, right? I could never. I tried Dance Dance Revolution.
Oh, my God.
Like, years earlier. That was fun, but it wasn't like a thing. So my sister got into this. She's like, you would like this. Try it. And I got hooked in right away because it was short. It was constantly different things, mm-hmm. and even from day to day, different things. It kept you into it. You didn't feel like you were just doing one thing for 30 minutes, and you knew it was going to suck, but it was only going to be about 15, 20 minutes. And afterwards, that high you get after that kind of intense, high-intensity training, you feel great, and you're like, yeah, this is why I did it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then right away, I saw myself getting stronger, and I don't think I've told this story on the podcast. One day I went up to my wife and I was like feeling my upper arm here. And it was all – I was like, what are these bumps? What is this? She goes, that's a tricep, you idiot. I was like, oh, muscles. I have – and then you get addicted to the muscles a little bit. And I was like, holy shit. Like it changed my body just by doing this.
Then you started showing up to work without a shirt on.
Then I forgot to wear shirts. And then I was oiled up all the time. And then it just got out of control. And now I'm a fucking fat slob.
No, but that's a real thing though. When you work out real hard, I mean the workout high, even like
runner's high,
yeah.
But this that workout high is so good.
Yeah, no, it is good,
and it makes it. And you're like, this is why I do it, and you want to keep chasing that. But really, that's why I learned to do so many things, and it was never boring.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time that, it's mental. Like I learned that this is the best thing I learned. I learned to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And be okay with it and push through it.
Right.
And then when you push through it, you're fucking on point, dude. The shit is just firing and you feel like you can keep going.
You're stronger.
And then by that point, the workout's over and you just feel amazing.
Right.
But really, that main thing was like I learned to be okay with being uncomfortable.
Well, that's how you grow.
Yeah.
Being comfortable with the uncomfortable. Yeah.
You have to get past that and then you get the rewards. It's very interesting.
It is very. No, it's definitely interesting.
And I miss it. Like, we did a shoot in the weight room the other day, and I just did a couple of squat cleans. Actually, I did a squat clean, and I ripped the elbow out of my shirt. Like, I felt awesome, though. I was like, cool. I'm like the Hulk. And I did, like, two, and I put it down. I was like, wow, that felt great. I really miss that. Yeah, just because I haven't been moving like that.
I would do CrossFit. The fact is, though, is that it is very expensive. And
yeah, I had kind of a deal going with the place I was going at.
So. Well, I have a deal going with the gym I used to work at.
Yo.
They still think I work there.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's been 8 years.
You get an employee discount.
So I keep showing them. I worked out for free.
I don't think they don't care.
Well, they see my face often now that they don't even check the ID. I'm sure it would expire if they ran it through the scanner. It would be expired.
They're making enough money on the other fucking schlubs who are paying $300 a month.
In the suburbs, I guess they don't. Well, they recognize my face and they're like, "Hey,
he's cool."
They did ask me one time. They were like, "So, what do you actually do?" I'm like, "I work in maintenance." They're like, "Oh, that's why you're not around often." I'm like, "Yeah, I only come around when things need to be fixed."
You said you work in maintenance.
I fix toilets and shit.
I work out all this time. I'm the strongest janitor there is here. I crush you.
Well, it's funny too because I always come in like the shirts that I like from work.
Yeah,
like with the logos and stuff.
So yeah. Like, oh, they think
so.
You're
they're
like
what
athlete.
The hell is this guy,
dude? That's the other great thing about CrossFit is you really don't need a lot of equipment. It's old school. It's an open room. It's bars. It's jump ropes. It's medicine balls. It's kettlebells. It's free weights. And in one simple space, you could do tons of four different things. Mm-hmm. You take a little run, you come back, you do some more shit. It's fun.
I respect CrossFitters. I just don't like.
It's a game. It turns it into a game.
I don't like the CrossFitters that are on like social media all the time. Like, yeah, look at me, I'm CrossFitting.
I might have used to be one of those.
I'm eating healthy now.
Yeah, I may used to be.
You should live like me. Fuck you.
It's a little.
I get what you're in, and it's changing you.
You're like everyone should do
everyone
this.
Should change.
This is amazing. Yes. I have the answer to all your problems right here.
Right. So I it's not coming from a place of show off.
It did get a little crazy.
Well, some of it is, but a lot of it's just that you've taken the pill.
Yeah,
you've taken the blue pill. And
do
you're
you?
Like, oh
what do you think? Do you think it's become established now? Is it still on its maturity? I feel like the wave of when it was all crazy and trendy is kind of coming down.
I think it's in its mature phase.
There's still a lot of boxes opening up all over the city.
Yeah,
but now it seems to be just like a standard thing.
Does it go the way of like Taibo?
That's what I'm saying. Like,
is
this
it just a fad?
Last?
I don't know.
Is it just a fad? Exactly.
I think it's got to get. It's going to get. Better in terms of like the trainers are going to get better. I think a lot of it too is there's going to be a lot of studies on if it's actually ruining joints and stuff like that. Because I've seen a lot of stuff where the Olympic lifting is not for high repetition, heavy intensity.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff coming out about that. So I mean, we'll see. I think it is. I personally think it's kind of a fad.
And there's CrossFit games on ESPN.
There is, but there was, on ESPN,
Texas Hold'em on
ESPN. There's also the spelling bee on ESPN.
ESPN.
There's no esports, though.
Oh, don't even start.
I'm just kidding.
I know how to push your buttons, though. That's awesome.
I think it's still, like, hot. I don't think it's as hot as it used to be, for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of on a steady level.
But I mean,
plateau.
I think it's mature phase.
It's so mature, it's a slow,
it's
slow
like
incline.
That and like plateauing a little bit.
Yeah,
but I don't know. We'll see.
Why don't we put this at the end of the Greg Wiseman show?
I don't know. Should we end it here?